Welcome. I'm Brother Eric John Phelps here at 24/7 World Radio Podcast. Coming to you live and direct from Newmanstown, Pennsylvania on this Sunday, March the 3rd, 2024. Today's broadcast is going to concern an error that is being made by the patriots, the white patriots of this country, concerning 1871 and the creation of a government for the District of Columbia. That this was the great change to our American government, and this is a mistake. 1871 was the year in which the District of Columbia was given a government in anticipation of March 9th, 1933. When FDR would seize every person, place, and thing in this country, that he would implement Emergency War Powers Military Government, springing from Trading with the Enemy Act, and that the Congress would approve and confirm this on March 9, 1933. 1871 was in preparation for March 9, 1933. So, did the big change come on February 21st, 1871? With the creation of the Act of 1871, District of Columbia Act of 1871, or was this change implemented on March 9th, 1933, with the Emergency Banking Relief Act and Proclamation 2040, approving and confirming Proclamation 2039 of March 6th? So, is it either the District of Columbia Act, the District of Columbia Organic Act of 1871, or the Emergency Banking Relief Act of March 9, 1933? The Patriot community, particularly the white people, who are for the most part the leaders of this, are making a great mistake in teaching that 1871 was the year that the government was changed, that the seizure took place, and this is simply not the case. So I want to go over the history of the District of Columbia Act of 1871, the District of Columbia Organic Act of 1871. I'll cover that first. And then we're going to go into the Emergency Banking Relief Act of March 9, 1933. So that you know the difference between the two, and that 1933 is the problem. 1871 was in preparation for it. So we read in this 1871 District of Columbia Organic Act of 1871, we read Chapter 62, an act to provide a government for the District of Columbia. Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America and Congress assembled, that all that part of the territory of the United States included within the limits of the District of Columbia be, and the same is hereby created into a government by the name of the District of Columbia, by which name it is hereby constituted a body corporate for municipal purposes, and may contract and be contracted with, sue and be sued, plead and be impleaded, have a seal and exercise all other powers of a municipal corporation not inconsistent with the Constitution and the laws of the United States and the provisions of this act. Therefore, it was on February 21st, 1871, that a government was created for the District of Columbia. The District of Columbia had already been created as the capital city, pursuant to the Constitution, when it made provision for that. And the District of Columbia was just fine. A portion of Maryland was ceded to it, and a portion of Virginia was ceded to it. So two southern states allowed certain of their land to be taken to comprise the District of Columbia way back in 81. Pardon me. So I will now go through my notes of this fairly long Organic Act, and I cover this in tab 4 of my consolidated private American citizenship class, of which I recommend that you take it. It's 3 days, it's $2,500, and it gets rid of all the nonsensical philosophies and errors that the Patriot Movement has put upon us for the last 30 years or so, 40 years. I've been doing this since 1982. It's been 26 years that I've been studying these matters and making my mistakes and ultimately coming to proper conclusions with the help of certain of my students, as well as the Lord helping me in these matters. So my purpose is to truly enable you to be free. But for that to happen, you've got to know what they did, what the Jesuit order has done to us. Because it's the Jesuits who run District of Columbia today through Georgetown University. All right, on page 1, I have 4 pages that summarize this District of Columbia history, and so we read paragraph 1. The District of Columbia was originally provided for in the Constitution for the United States of America, quote unquote, when completed in Philadelphia on September 14, 1787, later ratified on June 21, 1788, by 2/3 of the states, that's 9 states. The Constitution went into effect on March 4, 1789, when the government commenced with its first president of the, quote, more perfect union, unquote, President George Washington, who I'll add was the greatest man of the 18th century. Bible-believing, godly man, baptized in the Hudson River with over 100 witnesses in 1783, and he was baptized by his favorite chaplain, the Baptist Calvinist Major John Gano. Paragraph 2. The provision of the Constitution that provided for the nation's capital was, and is today, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 16. Quote, to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such a district, not exceeding 10 miles square, as may by cession of particular states, which as we saw were Maryland and Virginia, and the acceptance of Congress, become the seat of the government of the United States, and to exercise like authority over all places, purchases by the consent of the legislature of the state, in which the same shall be for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. That is, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings, and, quote, unquote. So this is the provision of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 16, that allowed for the creation of a capital or a seat of the government of the United States. Paragraph 3. On July 16, 1790, in accord with the above constitutional clause, the territory was formed by means of the District of Columbia Act, quote unquote, wherein the 10 square mile, quote unquote, territory was created and made the permanent seat of the nation's federal government. We read from the National Archives, quote, an act of Congress on July 16, 1790, 1 Statute 130, established a federal district for the seat of the United States government along the Potomac River on lands donated by Virginia and Maryland, stretching from Georgetown to the Anacostia River and later including Alexandria. The new federal territory was officially named the District of Columbia in 1796. The federal government relocated to the District of Columbia from Philadelphia on December 1, 1800, with Congress exercising exclusive management and legislative control over the district via designated committees in the House and Senate unquote. So here we have an act of Congress establishes federal district for the seat of the government. It later became to be known after the war between the states as Rome on the Potomac. And what made it Rome on the Potomac was two things: the 14th Amendment and the Organic District of Columbia Act of 1871. Continuing. You can read about this Rome on the Potomac, by the way, in a book titled Washington in the Lap of Rome by Justin Fulton, written in 1888. Paragraph 4. On February 27, 1801, Congress passed the District of Columbia Organic Act of 1801. Officially, quote, an act concerning the District of Columbia, unquote. In accordance with its power conferred by Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11 of the Constitution, it incorporated the District of Columbia under absolute control of Congress and organized the territory within the district into two counties, Washington and Alexandria counties. The corporate charters of the cities of Georgetown and Alexandria were left in place, no change being made to their legal status. So as we can see now, in 1801, the District of Columbia Organic Act incorporated the District of Columbia. So the District of Columbia is incorporated in 1801. On May 3rd, 1802, the city of Washington was granted a corporate municipal government consisting of a mayor appointed by the President of the United States. And I add, meanwhile, the War of Northern Aggression, erroneously termed by the radical Red Republican Northern victors as the Civil War, had been fought from 1861 to 1865. The 14th Amendment had been declared to have been ratified by 3/4 of the states on July 28, 1868. This accomplished the centralization of power in the new national, quote-unquote, civilian government, no longer a federal civilian government. That's because the 14th Amendment, Section 1, made federal citizenship, broadened it, and enlarged it into national citizenship. Thus, the United States of America was given a new civilian government, in fact, a second civilian government, for the new de facto Second Republic of the United States of America. The new nation is termed by this author as, quote, 14th Amendment America. It is to be a consolidated, de facto American empire of conquered states, modeled after the Pope's former European, quote, Holy Roman Empire, led by a Roman Catholic emperor from 692 to 1806, when destroyed by Napoleon I as ordered by his advisor, the Jesuit Abbe Sieyes. The new National Republic of the United States of America needed, in effect, a new consolidated capital with a brand new government. Number 6. Therefore, the radical Red Republican Congress would put forth its, quote, District of Columbia Organic Act of 1871, unquote. The act approved by Congress and signed into law on February 21, 1871, gave a corporate municipal government to the District of Columbia. The first paragraph of the act reads, quote, that all that part of the territory of the United States included within the limits of the District of Columbia, and the name and the same is hereby, quote, created into a government by the name of the District of Columbia, by which name it is hereby constituted a body corporate for municipal purposes, and may contract and be contracted with, sue and be sued, plead and be impleaded, have a seal and exercise all other powers of a municipal corporation, not inconsistent with the Constitution and laws of the United States and the provisions of this act, unquote. So now the District of Columbia that was incorporated in 1801 is now given a government. It's created into a government by the name of the District of Columbia. Before 1871, this did not happen. So, it's a municipal corporation. It's been given a separate and distinct government in 1871 and had already been incorporated in 1801. Number 7. This act created a government in the form of a public municipal corporation for the territory, the first called the District of Columbia. Quote unquote. This new consolidated government created by Congress was named, quote, the District of Columbia, unquote. So, we have a special government created for the District of Columbia. The District of Columbia is modeled after Rome, or more even importantly, the sovereign state of Vatican City on the Tiber River. You have the sovereign state of Vatican City on the Tiber River. You have District of Columbia on the Potomac River. They're identical. There's the Vatican Empire. There's the Pax Vaticanicus, or the Pax Romana. And then there is the Pax Americana, the Peace of America, or the American Empire, or the 14th Amendment American Empire, or the Pope's Holy Roman 14th American Empire, with its center city of the District of Columbia, not Washington, the District of Columbia. This new government was never, then or now, a private corporation as espoused by a host of patriot pundits. This government is not the commercial, quote-unquote, USA Inc., as described by the late Irwin Schiff in his epic work, The Biggest Con. On the contrary, that government would strive on March 9, 1933, with the implementation of President Roosevelt's Emergency War Powers Military Government, which is today, quote, USA Inc., unquote. USA Inc., unquote, is the Emergency War Powers Military Government established on March 9, 1933, not before. That did not happen in 1871. Paragraph 8. The Act of 1871 abolished the corporate city charters of the City of Washington and the City of Georgetown. However, the names of those cities with their city limits will continue to be known by their historic names. We read from Section 40 of the Act, quote, and be it further enacted that the corporate charters of the cities of Washington and Georgetown shall be repealed on and after the first day of June, A.D. 1871, and all offices of said corporations abolished at that date. That portion of said district included within the present limits of the City of Washington shall continue to be known as the City of Washington, and that portion of said district included within the limits of the City of Georgetown shall continue to be known as the City of Georgetown, unquote. But notice this, their charters are repealed on the first day of June, 1871. Remember the act here, the District of Columbia Act is passed on February 21st, 1871. 9. The Congressional Act of 1871 goes on to state in Section 41, and upon the repeal of the charters of the cities of Washington and Georgetown, the District of Columbia be, and is hereby, declared to be the successor of said corporations and all the property of said corporations and of the County of Washington, shall become vested in said District of Columbia, and all fines, penalties, costs, and forfeitures, which are now by the law made payable to said cities, respectively, or said levy court, shall be paid to said District of Columbia. So, the charters of Washington and Georgetown are repealed, and they will be, the District of Columbia is the successor of these corporations of Washington and Georgetown. So you see, the Jesuits are centralizing District of Columbia, making Washington and Georgetown those cities part of the District of Columbia, or District of Columbia. They are not separate corporations as they were before they were repealed, or those corporate charters were done away with, okay, in 1871. Continuing, number 10. The Congressional Act of 1871 not only created a civilian corporate government, including legislative, executive, and judicial branches, for the territory called the District of Columbia, quote-unquote, but it abolished the corporate charters of the City of Washington and City of Georgetown, thereby reducing those cities to the territorial government of the District of Columbia. The act, pursuant to the purposes of the Jesuit order, consolidated and centralized power in the District of Columbia, later to be called by many Protestant and Baptist ministers, quote, Rome on the Potomac, unquote. The President of the United States would appoint the governor of the District of Columbia, and thereby be the ruler of the District of Columbia, in preparation for the Jesuit order's Masonic coup d'etat that would be carried out on March 9, 1933. And I will add, aided and abetted by certain Knights of Malta, like John J. Raskob, and the most infamous James A. Farley. 11. The Act of 1871 was repealed by Congress in 1874. Now, this is very important for you to remember. This Act of 1871 that created a government for the District of Columbia was repealed by Congress in 1874, even though the Act had created the first single municipal corporate government for the District of Columbia. This government would be reimposed 4 years later in 1878. So you want to remember this. 1871, they create a special government for the District of Columbia. 1884, it is repealed. So there must have been some white Anglo-Saxon Protestants and Baptist Calvinists there in the government that saw what was coming, and they repealed this act. Well, the Jesuits didn't like it, because they're not modeling, they can't model their American empire after Rome, so they have to have their center city and the government for the center city. And so in 1878, it's reimposed. The District of Columbia has had its government since really 1878, not 1871. Paragraph 12. On June 11, 1878, Congress would pass, quote, an act providing a permanent form of government for the District of Columbia, unquote. Chapter 180, Section 1, 20, Statute 102. The act caused the District of Columbia to remain and continue as a civilian municipal corporation. This act would reimpose the consolidated and centralized civilian government created by Congress with this Act of 1871. So, District of Columbia is a consolidated and centralized civilian government, finally finished and done and put in place on June 11, 1878, but had first been put in place on February 21, 1871. 13. The Jesuit order now had its, quote, Rome on the Potomac, unquote, with the government of the territory of the District of Columbia in place. The president was supreme over the governor of the District of Columbia, whom he appointed. That all that was needed was a calculated crisis, namely the Great Depression of 1929, brought about by that foremost short seller of stock, Knight of Malta Joseph P. Kennedy, that would justify imposing emergency war powers military government on March 9, 1933. When that day would arrive, the civilian government of the Municipal Corporation of the District of Columbia, finally established on June 11, 1878, would be ousted. In its place would be imposed an emergency war powers military government in the District of Columbia, over which the commander-in-chief would rule as supreme. Conclusion. When FDR decreed his Proclamation 2039 on March 6, 1933, coupled with the declared passage of the Emergency Banking Relief Act on March 9, 1933, which is 12 United States Code 95A and B, that has been, since 2015, omitted from Title 12 and placed in a footnote of Title 50, USC 4305A. So, with this act, Emergency Banking Relief Act of March 9, 1933, now in Title 50, immediately followed by FDR's Proclamation 2040 on the very same day, the Constitution's civilian government was temporarily ousted and a National Emergency War Powers Military Government, 50 U.S.C. 4305B, was imposed in both the geographical, quote, United States of America, unquote, as well as the geographical, quote-unquote, District of Columbia, as well as in every state of the National Union. Remember, the United States is no longer a federal union. It is a compact of sovereign states now under the 14th Amendment that comprise a national union. And with that national union came national citizenship. With the federal union came the federal citizenship that was only for whites. Dred Scott decision is clear. But with the 14th Amendment that overruled the Dred Scott decision, federal citizenship was broadened into national citizenship, and hence, with everyone having national citizenship, both whites and blacks, and later Asians, there would be a national government. So we have not had a federal government since July 28, 1868. It has been a national government ever since. And the reason why they keep calling it a federal government is to keep you in the dark from realizing that the federal government ceased to exist the day the 14th Amendment was declared to be ratified on July 28, 1868 by the Radical Red Republicans in Congress, who were communists and Jacobins and servants of the Jesuit order. And I mean Thaddeus Stevens and Charles Sumner and other evil, wicked men. John Bingham out of Ohio, he is the author of Section 1 of the 14th Amendment. John Bingham is also the one that will oversee the military tribunal for the trial of the assassins of Abraham Lincoln. And the purpose of John Bingham was to keep the Secretary of War, Edwin Stanton, out of the picture because he was the overseer of the assassination, aided and abetted by Bernardine F. Wiggett, who was a powerful Georgetown Jesuit at the time. So John Bingham, a radical red Republican responsible for Section 1 of the 14th Amendment, making citizenship national, state citizenship subordinate to national citizenship, all done by the Jesuits in control of the radical red Republican Party. So we continue. Immediately followed by FDR's Proclamation 2040 on the very same day, the Constitution's civilian government was temporarily ousted and a National Emergency War Powers Military Government, 50 U.S.C. 4305B, was imposed in both the geographical United States of America, that's all the states at the time, as well as the geographical District of Columbia. So both the United States of America and District of Columbia are given an emergency war powers military government. And I would also state that, no, they were given, yeah, on March 9th, 1933, an emergency war powers military government, and every state would then be given a federal emergency war powers military government. There is no state civilian government. There has been no state civilian government since March 9, 1933. All the states' civilian governments have been ousted, and they've been temporarily placed with the federal emergency war powers, or rather, the National Emergency War Powers military government. Imposed on March 9, 1933, not only on the United States of America, not only on the District of Columbia, but on every state also. This was the nationalization of all the states, tending to centralization of power, which is a Jesuit maxim. A Jesuit maxim is absolutism, and absolutism is premised upon nationalization or centralization of power in any country. So, we read again. A national emergency war powers military government, 50 U.S.C. 4305B, was imposed in both the geographical, quote-unquote, United States of America, as well as the geographical, quote-unquote, District of Columbia, as well as in every state of the National Union. The, quote, Holy Roman, unquote, 14th Amendment American Empire was now born on March 9, 1933 to the present, which is now 2024. Its commander-in-chief to rule the District of Columbia as well as the states of the American Union, now deemed quote-unquote conquered territories, unquote, from the, quote, District of Columbia. He's going to rule these conquered territories from the District of Columbia, directed by the Jesuits of Georgetown University, overseeing the Pope's Archbishop of District of Columbia. The end. This is how we got the government that we have today. The Act of 1871, the District of Columbia Organic Act of 1871, merely laid the foundation for what would be done with the Emergency Banking Relief Act on March 9, 1933. So anybody advocating restoring the Republic doesn't know what they're talking about. The Republic is still here. Actually, it's the Second Republic, because with the 14th Amendment, it made citizenship from federal to national, and so the government went from federal to national. So it's really the second civilian government of the United States of America, this one being national, the previous being federal. And in this de facto, in this, with this national government in place, it was ready now to have a crisis created, which would be the Great Depression, caused by two things. There were three Irish Catholic short sellers of stock in Wall Street. The foremost was Joe Kennedy, a Knight of Malta, the father of John F. Kennedy and Teddy Kennedy. He would cause the Great Depression, coupled with the Pope's Federal Reserve Bank and withdrawing 40% of all credit in circulation. Those two things caused the Great Depression. It was not a failure of capitalism. So now with the Great Depression in place, now we have a reason to impose military government. And when military government would be imposed, civilian government would be temporarily ousted. We have not had civilian government for over 90 years. It's going on, it's going to be 91 years and 6 days. 6 days can be March 9th, 2024. It'll be 91 years. So, for all the patriots that are advocating that the District of Columbia Act turn this place into an empire, and it's the reason why the way things are today, they're absolutely wrong. They're avoiding, they're not talking about March 9th, 1933. This is the benchmark of American history. This is when our civilian government, our national civilian government located in District of Columbia, was changed into a national emergency war powers military government in District of Columbia, as well as a national emergency war powers military government for the United States of America, centered in District of Columbia. Okay. That's what happened. Anybody who tells you contrary to that doesn't know what they're talking about, and is misleading you either ignorantly or deliberately. And I maintain most of this misleading is deliberate, because of the new right that's going to come to power. They're going to have martial law declared out of a military government, a commander-in-chief running the military government. And as I teach in my class, one of the powers that the military government has is to declare martial law. And military government is also subject to international law, namely the Hague Convention, which therein is a remedy that I teach in my advanced class. For those of us who wish only to be subject to a civilian due process of law in any federal or state court. And if they cannot give us a civilian common law due process of law, then they cannot proceed, because that is our foremost right of a pre-March 9th, 1933 private citizen of the United States, private American national, non-quote-unquote U.S. citizen. So now, I trust that this has helped you with regard to the Act of 1871. Now we're going to touch on the Emergency Banking Relief Act of March 9th, 1933. March 9th, 1933 is the day when Rome imposed a coup d'etat over the, quote, accursed, unquote, United States of America. United States of America was historically white. It was Protestant and Baptist and Calvinistic, deemed to be a heretic nation by the Jesuits running the papacy. And therefore, this civilian government of these accursed heretics and liberals had to be ousted and temporarily replaced with an emergency war powers military government that the Jesuits would have complete and total control over through Georgetown University. That's a mere 4 miles from the Capitol. So this is the coup d'etat of March 9, 1933, Commander-in-Chief Franklin Delano Roosevelt, military conqueror, who was in fact Augustus Caesar of the American Republic, issues Proclamation 2039 on March 6, 1933, declaring a state of national emergency based upon the Trading with the Enemy Act of October 6, 1917. Congress passed the Emergency Banking Relief Act, 12 United States Code 95A, on March 9, 1933, thereby amending the notorious World War I statute, Trading with the Enemy Act, quote-unquote, of October 6, 1917. FDR issues Proclamation 2040 on March 9, 1933, also confirmed by Emergency Banking Relief Act, 12 United States Code 95B, and bringing the TWIA, Trading with the Enemy Act, inland, imposing military government. So that's what happened on March 9, 1933. The Jesuits brought war powers inland, and specifically an emergency war powers military government inland. And they would, 5 years later, in 1938, with the Erie decision, abolish civilian due process, federal general common law, with the Erie decision of April 25th, 1938. And after that, immediately, the jurisdiction, the Emergency War Powers Military Jurisdiction of Trading with the Enemy Act, Section 17, which is now 50 U.S.C. 4316, 4613. No, I'll get it. 50 U.S.C. 4316. That's where Section 17 of Trading with the Enemy Act has been codified. And so now that filled the vacuum when the Supreme Court did away with civilian due process, common law procedure in the federal courts. Okay? And so anybody that wants to impose a common law procedure anywhere does not know that the Emergency War Powers Military Government is in place in every state, in every county, throughout the courts of the federal government, and will never, ever cease to be until the Emergency Banking Relief Act is repealed, or that some people in a county or a state declare their independence from the United States of America, centered in District of Columbia, and resume the position of a sovereign nation once again, retaining all of its sovereign powers, including the right to declare war, coin money, have a national army, etc. So the only solution to this is you have to be restored to your previous status, which I teach in my citizenship class, of a pre-March 9th, 1933 private citizen of the United States, or your county and your state need to declare independence. They cannot secede. Texas versus White of 1879 says no state has the right to secede. So in passing a declaration of an ordinance of secession, that would be a lawless act. But it would be very lawful for a state or for a county to declare its independence from District of Columbia, United States of America, under military jurisdiction, under war powers military jurisdiction, that would be blessed by the Lord. Providing, first of all, we have a great awakening, as what took place before the American Revolution, with the great awakening of preaching by George Whitefield and Jonathan Edwards and others, and then a desire to be free from a political tyranny, which the colonists desired, and then the Lord intervened for them and gave them political liberty and won a revolution that was never supposed to succeed. It was a miracle. The American Revolution, the greatest revolution in history. And so that's what needs to happen again. There needs to be repentance, a genuine sorrow for sins, and a personal belief on the Lord Jesus Christ that he died for your sins, was buried, and rose again. Acts chapter 20, where it's faith, repentance towards God and faith towards Christ. Faith about what? Faith that he died for your sins, that he was buried and rose again. And upon believing that gospel, the Lord will save you, place you in the body of Christ, seal you to the day of redemption. And now with the power, the Spirit of God, and with the understanding of what you're getting today, you will know exactly what to do. Call for the repeal of the Emergency Banking Relief Act, or we are declaring independence in our county or our state within 30 days or whatever. That's the remedy. There is no draining the swamp. There is no restoring the republic. The republic is still here. Just nobody lives in it in a civilian government with a proper pre-March 9th, 1933 private citizenship status. So when the Emergency Banking Relief Act is repealed, immediately everybody becomes a pre-March 9th, 1933 private citizen, and I don't have to teach my class anymore. Immediately, all the property that's been seized by the Commander-in-Chief goes back to the people. Immediately, the gold has to be brought into circulation once again. And silver needs to be brought into circulation, because the Emergency War Powers Military Government got rid of silver in circulation in 1965 with Lyndon Baines Johnson, that wicked sinner. So we can get that restored from what the military government has taken from us, and that Emergency War Powers Military Government is run by the Pope. When that happens, immediately, the Roosevelt Court's Erie decision falls away. It doesn't have any effect anymore. And so now we'll go back to civilian due process of law, at common law, where we can really punish crime. And there are no career criminals at common law. So we can go back to proper government, proper status of the people, proper acquisition of wealth, where the government ceased to be a socialist communist monster, imposing its emergency war powers around the world, attacking nations with Delta Force and Navy SEALs and all these other criminals invading these foreign countries without an act of war. All of this is typical Roman papal foreign policy. And so this needs to come to an end. How? Repeal of the Emergency Banking Relief Act, or declaration of independence by your state or your county. That's the only way. Or you have to refer back to your pre-March 9th, go back to that, to private citizen of the United States. You must have a release in your paperwork because you got in this by contract by way of the birth certificate and the seizure of March 9th, 1933, and you get out of it by way of another contract called a release on file in a public office. I teach all this in my private citizenship class. It's worth every penny of $2,500. It's a 3-day class. And if you're interested, you may contact me at rbpbchurch@comcast.net. Get in contact with me. I'll communicate with you. We'll set up a time for a class. You can pay me. Give your gift to the church, as this is a ministry of restoration of status. Not for profit, not in commerce, but a ministry of a 508c1a church, which is my church, Reformation Bible Puritan Baptist Church. And I trust that you will want to properly restore your status. But I'm going to end up with a warning. The new rite is coming, and it's going to be led by Roman Catholics. Roman Catholics like Steve Bannon, who in his daily broadcasts dresses like a Jesuit with a black shirt and a black jacket. He dresses in black every day. And there are others. But this is Jesuit-led New Right propaganda against the Jesuit-led leftist socialist communist propaganda, that the outcome of this dialectic, of this Hegelian dialectic, of the thesis, the communism that we've had since FDR, and the antithesis, the New Right that's being proposed now by Trump and other New Righters, will end within the establishment of martial law and a military dictator that will set things right as Hitler was supposed to set things right, as Lenin was supposed to set things right when he was brought to power in 1922 after the Civil War ended in 1924. So it's all a ruse designed to deceive you into sacrificing your rights, your status, going into a military dictatorship, an absolutist dictatorship, with the Jesuits ruling that dictator. One more thing I wish to add. These patriots are teaching you that we're in admiralty jurisdiction. That is absolutely not true. When the Emergency War Powers military government was established on March 9, 1933, it ousted civilian government. 5 years later, with the Erie decision that did away with federal general common law within the civilian due process of the court, immediately Trading with the Enemy Act, Emergency War Powers military jurisdiction came into play, and that jurisdiction proceeds according to the course and mode of admiralty jurisprudence, which is a federal jurisprudence or a national jurisprudence. It only existed on a national level. There is no admiralty jurisprudence on a state level. So to bring it in into the states, they had to overlay the civilian due process of the states at common law and in equity with this federal or national emergency war powers military jurisdiction that proceeds according to admiralty jurisprudence. And Melvin Stamper says it's absolutely correct. He says that all the attorneys are taught admiralty jurisprudence. Why? Because every defendant has to have a surety. That's admiralty jurisprudence, among other things. All capital letter name, admiralty jurisprudence. Emergency War Powers military jurisdiction, proving the all caps name, you're in a military procedure. Here's an enemy belligerent, but the jurisprudence that the court follows is an admiralty jurisprudence. So when we declare our independence, all that falls away. Our civilian government comes back. Our civilian due process comes back. Our status of being a pre-March 9th, 1933 private citizen comes back. And all of that's restored once the Emergency Banking Relief Act is repealed, or once your state or your county declares its independence. That is the solution. And there is no other solution. So I trust you, dear patriots, will start advocating the right solution. 1871 is not the problem. It's the foundation for the problem. The problem is 1933. So may you go after and start broadcasting about what March 9th, 1933 did to us, so we can get a remedy here of either repealing the Emergency Banking Relief Act that approved and confirmed proclamations 20, every proclamation of the president since March 4th, 1933 on, or our state and county can declare its independence, not secede, declare its independence, not secede, declare its independence. So until we meet again, Lord bless, Maranatha. Send your gifts to Eric John Phelps, ERICJONPHELPS, at Cash App, or you can send a check to RBT, P.O. Box 306, Newmanstown, Pennsylvania, 17073, or you can give through PayPal as a friend for friends and family, rbpbdonate@comcast.net. So until then, till we meet again, Lord bless, Maranatha.